Welcome back to Karen About Your Health on HealthBeatRadio.com. I'm here with Rabbi Ed Weinsberg, a cancer, prostate cancer survivor and author. And we were just talking about the importance of asking your physician questions and being ready to talk with your physician. Do you have any advice on what types of questions men should ask when they're dealing with prostate cancer?
Oh, absolutely, Karen. You know, I would argue that it's vital to ask questions because this is a kind of communication which will focus attention to what you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, I'm a little hoarse this morning. So let me ask the questions, as it were, that if you were my doctor, okay?
Okay.
If you were my urologist. So the first thing I would want to know is my prostate cancer localized? Meaning, is it at an early stage contained within the prostate? As I mentioned earlier, the area with just below the bladder that does produce some semen, but also has other minor functions. Or if it's not localized, is it more advanced and spread to other areas of my body? And I always ask docs, what evidence do you have for this? I don't want them to draw broad, sweeping conclusions unless they can show me tests that were done that demonstrate this and worst-case scenarios that follow. In fact, I usually ask then how long you think I've had the cancer, how slowly or quickly is the tumor growing,
uh-huh.
Based on the PSA exams. That's a prostate-specific antigen. It's a protein that appears only really from the prostate that demonstrates if there might be cancer or not. I will tell you, it's a test, Karen, which says you might have cancer, and therefore you need to have a biopsy, which determines if you have cancer. It's not a conclusive exam. It's indicative. It says maybe you have cancer. I ask as well, is it treatable? How treatable is it? What type of treatment? And the pros and cons of each. Now, most docs will go through that, but really, really fast. So I always advise people, read a good book, whether it's mine or anybody else's, or go online. But watch out for what date what you're reading was written, so you're sure it's not outdated.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people overlook that. And you ask, of course, what side effects there are of treatment options, because that's somehow, I would say, more critical than even the fact of having prostate cancer, especially if it's early. To have ED or incontinence is a very, very significant thing. And maybe we can get into how it affects a man's self-image, the way breast cancer might affect a woman's self-image.
Mm-hmm.
What treatment would you choose if you were in my shoes? There's a little rhyme scheme. What treatment would you choose if you were in my shoes? I love that question because it personalizes something. The doctor has to literally say, assuming I was in his condition, what would I choose of the various options? And there are 15. We can talk about that. Most of them are variations of radiation, but of course there are two types of surgery. There's hormone treatment and so forth, and suggestions for how to prepare. Knowing, too, what will happen after treatment. So you ask the doc, how long will I be out of commission once you complete the treatment? Give me some names of patients who've gone through it so I can compare notes. And most docs will do it if they get the patient's privacy
mm-hmm.
approval. And so forth, literature, books, as I mentioned. And here's a corker that I always tell people, and I'm a health coach and intimacy coach also, and the corker is this: always ask your doc if it's okay to get a second opinion from another urologist. Or if it's another illness, do the same thing, especially if it's a serious kind of procedure like surgery. I will tell you this, most doctors will not mind that if they're confident in what they are saying. Because
uh-huh.
another doc will just reinforce what they are saying. And it's not likely that if it's a doc who has the qualities we spoke about earlier, that humanity plus technical proficiency, that a patient will go elsewhere. There are, of course, people who are TERF-conscious doctors. And so for some docs, they say, why? Why would you go to somebody else? I'm good enough. Frankly, if I hear that from a doctor, I already know that's an indicator that maybe I should be going elsewhere. That's too defensive.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Yeah. So those are the kinds of questions that I would raise with my doctor.
Great. Thank you for those. Those are great. I hope people were jotting those down as you were talking. Now, how do people get your book?
You can get it on Amazon or just go to the website, which is the same name as the book, which is Conquer Prostate Cancer, C-O-N-Q-U-E-R, Prostate is P-R-O-S-T-A-T-E. I spell it out because some people think it's prostrate, I think.
Oh.
Prostate at cancer.com. Or just so rabbied.com. That's easier for a lot of people, rabbied.com. There's not only looking at the book, but, you know, there's a lot of free information. I have a blog going on. I have other resources to go to, and people are welcome to go there anytime. And in fact, I have to mention at this point, Karen, that if any of your listeners would like to take me up on this, there's a free 20 minutes, no obligation, if they want to talk with me about any of their personal concerns. That goes for women. And when I say women, I don't mean just older women who are seniors, but boomer and senior women, because, you know, boomer women have a double trouble often. They may have a husband who could potentially have prostate cancer, or a father who might already have it, and so we have to take that into account. I'm happy to talk to anybody for 20 minutes gratis, no charge at all, and if they want to continue, we can talk thereafter.
That's great. Thank you for offering that.
Oh, sure.
Now, you mentioned there's a number of treatments, and you kind of glazed over them. Would you like to go into more detail on some of these treatments?
Sure. Absolutely. Let me tell you my experience, which I do relate in the book in greater detail than I'll mention now, with my first urologist. What happened there is he went through the litany of treatments when I asked him, what can you do about my prostate cancer? And first of all, he says, well, I've been doing surgery for a while. That's certainly one option. We do it locally here in Sarasota where I live and so forth. And I said, well, I heard about this robotic surgery thing. What about that approach? He says, well, it was relatively new back in 07. It had been going on for 6 years. You know, there's really nothing around here in Sarasota. He told me you'd have to go to Tampa for that. So I said, well, why should I bother then? Okay, what else is there? And he went into the radiation stuff. Other radiation, the most prevalent are external beam radiation, where they use a graph. It's very technically sufficient in terms of computerized technology and all that. They literally use a radiation beam from outside, and there are all kinds of varieties of that to help eliminate, usually over a 45-day period, 20 minutes at a time, the prostate cancer. Then there's the what they call brachytherapy or seeding, where they put titanium sizes, about 100 pieces of sizes of rice, literally inserted via a hypodermic needle through the bottom of the gentleman, and it goes right into the prostate since it's adjacent to that area. That, by the way, I'll tell you a quick story, was something I ruled out the next time I saw this doctor. Because he said to me I almost incidentally, for the first month or two after seeding of that sort, radiation of these titanium pieces, you won't be able to really interact intimately with your wife because you don't want her to get the radiation. And even more so, don't be near any infant for at least 2 to 4 months.
Oh, yikes.
Yes, and when I heard that, at that point, my one and only grandchild, my granddaughter, Kayla, was about a year and a half old. I said, no way. Family is so important to me, and I think to anybody, right, with cancer of any sort, or illness for that matter, a general illness, that I rule that out right away. And yet many, many men go through that process. Maybe they don't have any infants to worry about, whatever it is. So those are the main ones. Now, hormone treatment is really primarily for more advanced prostate cancer patients. Hormone treatment, something like Lupron, will retard the growth of the cancer by lowering the testosterone, which docs say feed the cancer and make it grow. Unfortunately, this doctor decided that I should, since I might get radiation, I should get Lupron or any other type of hormone like that. And frankly, it does lower a man's testosterone level to about castrate level, 0, or 8 in my case, and when low normal starts at around 280 on up for units of blood is how it works, up to 1,200, which is on the higher side of normal. So you can see where I was at, and it caused hot flashes. So it's not my first choice, I'll tell you that, for a lot of reasons. It's got a, you know, hormone treatment is excellent for people with advanced prostate cancer who generally cannot have surgery, although now there's a change about, they're saying, yes, even advanced prostate cancer men can benefit from surgery. There's even freezing, believe it or not, of a prostate cancer called cryotherapy, or overheating to dissipate it, which is a lesser advanced form in this country. It's still in the end phases of testing called HIFU, high-intensity focused therapy via ultrasound, where it's overheated, the prostate, and therefore the cancer disappears. But don't forget, in all these cases, the prostate itself is rendered useless. So you have those side effects, which I mentioned earlier, the ED, inability to ejaculate, and so forth. The most recent form, although it happens to be one of the older ones, but the one that's getting more and more hyped is proton therapy, or proton treatment, which is an incredible machine. It fills a whole wing of a hospital. Can cost, I think it is $150 to $200 million. And they are now completing the eighth one in the country. The first one was in Loma Linda in California. And that can be good for any, it literally is like a straight arrow shooting directly at a cancer as opposed to the entire area. It's so true to the purpose of getting rid of the cancer. It's also used, by the way, Karen, in brain surgery, where there's brain cancer or other kinds of situations. That's how fabulous it is. But people don't know necessarily that there are no side effects. There's anecdotal evidence that there's fewer side effects, but there can be some damage, excessive bleeding, or whatever it may be.
Oh, it all sounds, you know, I'm sitting here listening to you, and I was thinking if someone I loved had this, there's so many choices. It's really scary. What can, I know men, I had a men's health week recently, too. Men don't often reach out when they're stressed or feeling, you know, I'd imagine this could cause severe depression, stress, and the pain involved. How would you suggest men get through this?
That's a very critical issue, too, and I'm glad you raised it. That was one of my goals, to help men and women cope with prostate cancer when it arises, and also that includes figuring out what treatment choice is best for them. I openly admit in my book that robotic surgery, which I ended up with when I got to that second position, was best for me and might be for many men. But I have to let you know that whichever of these treatments, especially radiotherapy or surgery, a man may take, the outcome is pretty much the same in terms of the cure rate, meaning most men who have early prostate cancer are cured of the cancer, and in terms of the degree to which a certain proportion of men will get either ED or permanent incontinence. And the numbers are high on the ED side and relatively low on the incontinence side. So reading and learning from individuals who've gone through it is important. That leads me to the support group process. A couple of major, actually national or international organizations, so many places throughout the USA, Us Too comes to mind, and I'm in touch with some of their leadership. Us Too, that's US, new word, T-O-O, .org, is an excellent site to look at material. And virtually every question and different forms men can get into either before or during the process of what their treatment entails. Support groups per se really exist to go in person, which I favor, but I don't insist on, as long as a person is comfortable or speaks with neighbors who've gone through it and are helpful. The two types of support groups are either what I call expressive, informational. Informational means simply that people share resources. Expressive means they share their basic concerns, their fears, anxieties, and so forth. Unfortunately, I don't see as much of that as we ought to have. It's hard. Someone like I can be a facilitator. Someone like me, excuse me, I can be a facilitator, but not everybody's trained to do that, even if they head up a prostate cancer organization. And also, sometimes the group's too large, so they don't have enough people to do that and informational is as far as I get. But one-on-one, after a meeting or before, men do talk. I've discovered that, yes, you're right, generally men don't talk about their health concerns. But there's one major exception to that, which I found. Namely, if a man learns that another person has had prostate cancer, and that man, who've already gone through it, learns, oh, this man's new to this, the one who's already gone through it tends to open up and say, oh, yeah, I went through that, and I can tell you a couple of things if you want to know. I've discovered that does occur. But I think you're right. Compared to women, men are not as communicative among themselves, not as open. It's a cultural thing, of course.
Mm-hmm. What about just coping with, I mean, I'd imagine that getting ED is probably the worst thing that most men can think of happening to them. Like, how do the people you've talked to cope with that?
Well, let me try to elaborate on the problem as you began to describe it, because you're absolutely right, and then I'll try to offer some suggestions on coping mechanisms. The problem is a male's self-image is often deeply affected. I mean, here this dude has been functioning sexually the vast majority of his life. He may even feel he's at his prime.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, I've been married 38 years, and my wife and I are very intimate and so forth, not just emotionally, but physically. And I was 62 at the time of surgery, and suddenly, I should say, the spigot was shut off, okay? This is very threatening to, was to me, I have to admit. I would say for 9 months or maybe a year, I was really depressed. I felt less of a man than I was previously. And I think most guys would agree that that's what happens. But I will tell you this, which is a bigger picture. There are anywhere, estimates vary, between 15 and 30 million men in this country who have ED. And a number of them have prostate cancer. That's why it happens, but a number of them for other reasons. That's 15 to 30 million men have ED. So the first thing, as far as a coping mechanism, is to know you're not alone. Close to 50% of men, after either surgery or radiation for prostate cancer, will have permanent ED. I once interviewed a gentleman who, by the way, was, I think, 79, and he was a pastor, and word for ED, of course, is impotence. And when I said, well, how are you coping with your impotence? He said, Rabbi Ed, let's call it ED, not impotence. Impotence has a finality. ED suggests a range of difficulty from occasional slight to very serious and permanent. And you can have permanent ED, but it's not going to necessarily erase all your sexual feelings, meaning your libido, although that happens as well. And so there's a range of ED, and I appreciated his comment. Erectile dysfunction is a less threatening term anyhow than impotence. Impotence suggests you are literally incapable, not only, pardon the expression, of getting it up, but of doing much of anything. You're no longer a man. Whereas ED simply says you have a illness that's symptomatic problem because of, call it stress, psychological concerns, incompatibility with one's partner, et cetera, et cetera. And knowing you're not alone, and knowing that there's a range of symptoms which can be treated. And here's the most important coping mechanism I can think of. It's physical medicine. It is amazing to me to hear how many people, even on some of the Us2 sites which deal with intimacy, forget that there's a hormone called testosterone, supplemental testosterone. When a man has prostate cancer, he's warned that added testosterone, a higher level, could potentially feed the prostate cancer, as I said earlier. But certainly, once you no longer have a prostate that's functional, it's been basically removed or eradicated through radiation, there have been wonderful books, especially by a fellow, I believe his name is Morgan Stern, or close to that, at Harvard, that say higher testosterone, supplemental testosterone, mm-hmm. can be beneficial to a man without threatening him in any way. And I myself have gone through, and I'm currently on, testosterone therapy. What it does, and I consider it one of those...
Rabbi Ed, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I got to go to a break. Can you stay on and we can finish talking about this?
I'll be happy to.
Great. Thank you. You're listening to Karen About Your Health on HealthBeatRadio.com. Rabbi Ed and myself will be right back after the break.